Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Thinking Spatially podcast series. The Thinking Spatially podcast series, where we think spatially across space, across time, and across scales, from local to global scales. Today's episode is about observatories. Observatories, permanent monitors of the Earth and beyond. Observatories. Geographers have always been keen observers of our changing planet. From the time of the ancient Greek, Persian, and Chinese geographers to today, geographers have meticulously recorded what they have observed on, under, and over the surface of the Earth, as well as in the oceans, on ice, in caves, in space, and everywhere else that they could climb, walk, or crawl into. Yet for all of these observations, geographic measurement was always limited to where the geographers themselves could reach. If they were not physically present, then the phenomena were not recorded. This situation led to a keen interest in the establishment of permanent observatories where observations could be carried out all year long, with instruments and staff able to carry out these measurements. An observatory is an established location or facility used for observing events, on or under the ground, or in the sky. Disciplines for which observatories have been constructed include astronomy, meteorology, climatology, biology, geology, oceanography, volcanology, and geography, and probably more that we could mention here. Historically, observations and observatories were considered and constructed aligned with certain phenomena, such as the equinoxes and solstices, so that those phenomena could be observed more readily, such as at Stonehenge in England and Zorat's Kerer in Armenia, though much debate exists as to whether these were really constructed as observatories. Later, observatories contained a few instruments, such as the sextant, for measuring the distance between stars. When thinking about observatories as being places set aside for scientific research, the oldest ones are Al-Shamishiya Observatory in Baghdad, Iraq, 825 AD. The Mahadayapuram Observatory in Kerala, India, 869. And the Marageh Observatory in Azerbaijan, 1259. During the 1500s and 1600s, many were constructed. In Denmark, Uraniborg and Stegeborg, Italy, Panzano, Netherlands, Leiden, France, the Paris Observatory, and England, the Royal Greenwich Observatory. The first in the USA were the Yale Observatory at Yale University, 1830, and the U.S. Naval Observatory in 1842. The development of observatories went hand in hand with that of research centers. Immediately following the scientific revolution, the 17th century Scientific Academy was born. In London, the Royal Society was founded in 1660. The Académie Royale des Sciences in France was founded by Louis XIV in 1666. In his newly created capital, St. Petersburg, Peter the Great established an educational research institute in 1724. This became the first institution of its kind in Europe for the purpose of conducting research within a university setting. The idea eventually caught on. Research institutes emerged at the beginning of the 1900s, in part because they had distance from government supervision. These included the Rockefeller Institute, Bell Labs, the Scripps Research Institute, and the Carnegie Institution of Washington. Thomas Edison is attributed with creating the first industrial research laboratory. Universities followed suit as mass education produced a plethora of specialized scientific communities of practice. Today, observatories can be thought of in terms of being space-based, airborne, underground, and ground-based. Space-based observatories include the Hubble Space Telescope, but the hundreds of Earth-observing satellites orbiting the Earth can be thought of as observatories as well. These are used for weather and environmental monitoring, mapping, and remote sensing. Airborne observatories are housed in airplanes or balloons, while underground ones are either beneath the surface or measuring something beneath the surface. Of these, probably the most widely used by geographers is the Global Seismic Network, which provides real-time information on earthquakes. Many of the global observations are fed to the U.S. Geological Survey's Earthquake Center in Golden, Colorado, which I actually have been to many times, and I actually used to give tours there when I worked at the USGS. Ground-based observatories are still the most common. Many ground-based observatories include sensors for observing the radio and visible light portions of the electromagnetic spectrum. Most optical telescopes are kept within domed structures, which helps protect the instruments. They are usually located high in elevation and in clear climates to maximize dark and clear skies. Mauna Kea, Hawaii, for example, at 13,796 feet or 4,205 meters elevation, is home to several large optical telescopes, as is Cerro Toco in the Atacama Desert, Chile, at 18,500 feet or 5,640 meters. Radio observatories are typically situated away from urban centers in order to prevent electromagnetic interference from radio, TV, radar, and other devices. However, unlike optical observatories, they can also be located in valleys, which help to shield interference. These include Socorro, New Mexico in the USA, Jodrell Bank in the United Kingdom, Arecibo, Puerto Rico, Parkes, New South Wales, Australia, and Chaje Nantor in Chile. The ground-based observatories most used by geographers are typically the volcano observatories, along with a variety of ocean floating buoys. One array of buoys is named Argo and consists of 3,000 floats that measure the temperature and salinity of the upper 2,000 meters of the ocean. The Deep Ocean Assessment and Reporting of Tsunamis, or DART, systems each consist of a surface buoy and a bottom pressure recording package on the seafloor and transmit information via satellite. Another famous geographical observatory is the Emmonson Scott Station at the South Pole, located at 9,301 feet or 2,335 meters above sea level. The original Emmonson Scott Station was built by the USA government during 1956 as part of the International Polar Year. It was rebuilt in 1975 as a geodesic dome, which gradually sank deeper and deeper into the ice before being replaced in 2003 with a new building. One of the most famous observatories is the Royal Observatory in Greenwich, England. And if you haven't been there, I highly recommend it. It is fascinating. It was commissioned in 1675 by King Charles II. It housed clocks and nautical almanacs. Its importance rose when it became the internationally agreed-upon location for the prime meridian in 1884. Greenwich Mean Time was also calculated from celestial observations made here, replaced by Universal Time in 1954 from observations made at other observatories. Due to light pollution, electric railways, historical events such as World War II, the discovery that the prime meridian marker at the Royal Observatory is slightly east of 0 degrees longitude, and close proximity to London, nearly all the observatory scientific staff have relocated to other parts of the United Kingdom. Today, the Royal Observatory operates chiefly as a museum. However, the time ball still drops dutifully at 1300, 1 p.m., year-round, as it has for centuries. Another example of a geographic observatory is the Lhasa Plateau Ecological Research Station. This station belongs to the Chinese Academy of Sciences and is located in Tibet. The mission of this observatory is to monitor the long-term agricultural ecosystems in the Yarl Lung Zhambo watershed, to research alpine ecosystems on the Tibetan Plateau, and to support agricultural and pastoral sustainable development based on suitable and appropriate sciences and technologies. It also provides scientists with opportunities to conduct scientific research based on the particular conditions of the alpine environment around the Tibetan Plateau. It is also important to the research station to conduct all of this research with its own personnel. Observatories were revolutionary to geography. No longer did geographers have to rely on sending explorers or survey teams to locations to collect data. While field work would remain important, they could begin relying on a steady set of authoritative information from a growing network of sensors operating in permanent observatories. In some ways, the construction of observatories marked the beginning of big data. Observatories have not only become more numerous, but they have also become smaller. For instance, the Ecological National Observatory Network, or NEON, is a National Science Foundation-funded network of dozens of small platforms placed on small towers in 20 distinct regions of vegetation, landforms, climate, and ecosystems. It, NEON, is designed to measure the impacts of climate change, land use change, and invasive species on ecology. But sensors are also appearing in small plastic eggs to measure air quality. Others are under pavement to measure traffic counts. Others can determine how many people are entering a public square as part of a geofencing process. Indeed, the growing array of sensors on, under, and over the planet can be thought of as small observatories. For example, the Internet of Things, or IoT. Through citizen science, the sensor network can be thought of as including the over 8 billion humans on the Earth who can collect and share data. And that, folks, is a little bit on observatories. Observatories. Permanent monitors of the Earth and beyond. Thanks for being with me on this Thinking Spatially podcast episode.